Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today's show features Seth's conversation with filmmaker Brian Fogel, whose new documentary Icarus examines the Russian Olympic doping scandal. He then answers a few more questions backstage just for this podcast. But first, here's Seth.
Donald Trump gave a press conference right before we started taping, which means it's time for Breaking Crazy. President Trump this afternoon gave a press conference that can only be described as clinically insane. You know that list of side effects at the end of a pharmaceutical ad? He apparently has all of them. He said, among other things, that there were very fine people on both sides of the events in Charlottesville. He asked if people on the left have any guilt that the white supremacists became violent. And then he said this.
Many of those people were there to protest the taking down of the statue of Robert E. Lee. So, this week it's Robert E. Lee. I noticed that Stonewall Jackson's coming down. I wonder, is it George Washington next week? And is it Thomas Jefferson the week after? You know, you really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Where does it stop? Buddy, we've been asking ourselves that question since January. Normally, when someone is talking that level of crazy, Batman crashes through the ceiling and punches him. Trump is like a bad waitress in a crappy diner who's trying to get fired so she can go to a concert. Here's a picture of General John Kelly, his new chief of staff, during this press conference. Look at that guy. Trump is so fully out of his mind, he broke a general. That guy's been in wars. Congress, isn't this enough? Cut bait on the president. It's time to let this crazy bitch go to the concert. This has been Breaking Crazy.
Hi, this is Fred Armisen, the music director of the HG Band. Did you know that Late Night with Seth Meyers has a podcast now? That's what this is. And it's released every Wednesday and Friday. Tell your friends who love Late Night that they should subscribe at iTunes.com/Late Night Seth. You'll find it. What I just said, you'll be able to find it. I believe in you.
Our guest is the director and star of the new Netflix documentary, Icarus, which is streaming now. Please welcome to the show, Brian Fogel, everybody. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
This is a fantastic documentary, and like a lot of my favorite documentaries, it feels like the subject sort of turns based on what you discover over the course of making it. It begins with you doping yourself in a way that will evade testing, get away from testing. Exactly. And you use a Russian scientist that we saw in the clip, Grigory Rodchenko. Am I saying that?
Yes, Rodchenko? Grigory Rodchenkov.
And so were you honest with him in what you were trying to do here, which was to expose how people hide doping?
Well, I was. I came to him with this idea, and that's a whole other story how I get led to him. But essentially, you know, Lance Armstrong had evaded 500 anti-doping controls clean. So I'm going, wait, what is wrong with the system, what is wrong with Lance? And in this investigative journey, I get led to Grigory, and I go to Grigory, and I said, hey, will you help me dope and evade positive detection and teach me how to game the system? And he goes, yes.
Yeah. And it's interesting because this is a man who is behind the Russian athletic program, basically doping and avoiding being caught. And yet he comes across as in that clip. He's a very lovable character. Did you hit it off with him right away?
Well, the amazing thing about this guy is, as you see it, I mean, he's lovable, he's likable, he's funny, he's garrulous. And then he has this side to him, which you could never imagine, which is essentially he was the mastermind of Russia's state-sponsored doping program. And he wasn't just doping all the track and field athletes. He was doping pretty much all Russian athletes across all sport. And this program was in place for the last 40 years. And in so doing, Russia essentially stole thousands and thousands and thousands of medals from clean athletes all over the world, not to mention all the American athletes. And Gregory was the mastermind of this program, which I don't condone. And on the other hand, he is this incredibly warm and likable and lovable character.
I can't believe with everything else he did, he had time to be in a documentary.
You know, and that is the amazing thing about it, right? I first start talking to him right after the Sochi Olympics. And his job at Sochi is he's running the lab. And what he's doing at 3 o'clock in the morning is he, with the help of the FSB, the KGB, are breaking into these urine collection bottles and dumping out the dirty steroid urine of all the Russian athletes and swapping in clean urine. So this is what he's doing essentially while I'm corresponding with him. And so the fact that he had time to come to Los Angeles and smuggle my urine back to Russia to be tested, I mean, it is mind-boggling.
Now, during this, he basically has to flee Russia because
yes.
A report comes out. Tell us real quick about that.
So we had been working together at this point for almost 2 years. And the second year that we're working together, there's an investigation that's been launched by WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency. And this investigation was launched because of this German television documentary. And it's alleging that there's a state-sponsored system in Russia to dope the athletes. And Gregory is under investigation. November 2015, they released the findings of these reports. But it's only track and field at the time. But it's alleging that this system is true and that Gregory is essentially behind it. And in a period of about 5 days, Putin is on state television denying all the allegations. Not only is he denying it, he's saying that this is an individual act and anybody who was part of this will be held individually responsible and punishment will be absolute. And Gregory and I are Skyping and we're having a conversation about 5 days after. He has two FSB, KGB agents living in his home guarding him. He tells me that there is a suicide plan in place, that they're going to kill him and that he needs to get out of Moscow. And I buy him a plane ticket on my credit card. I just felt like my friend, you know, it wasn't about a movie at that point.
And now he's here, but you have not communicated with him for a while because he is under now American protection, is that?
He is under federal protective custody. So once he gets to Los Angeles, we spend about 7 months. And in these 7 months, I compile what is thousands of documents of evidence of this fraud, of this scandal. We bring it to the New York Times. This sets off a whole other investigation. Everything is proved. And at the same time, the Department of Justice launches their own investigation into the scandal. And because they believe that Gregory's life is at risk and they get intelligence that Russia is going to essentially do him harm, he has been in federal protective custody for the last year and 2 months with this ongoing investigation by the Department of Justice.
Well, it is a fantastic story. It's amazing not only how you found your way to it, but how you sort of reined it in once you had it. So thanks for making it. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank
Ryan
you.
Fogel, everyone. Icarus streaming now on Netflix.
Hi, everyone. It's Sarah from Late Night. I'm here with Brian Fogel, who's the director and star of the documentary Icarus. Just finished his segment with Seth. Just following up on a couple of things that we didn't get to in the interview. In the film, Gregory, who is the Russian scientist you work with, says he feels responsible partially for the Crimea invasion. Putin's popularity was very low before the Sochi Olympics. After it skyrocketed, national pride was super high. Without the medals, he talks about maybe it wouldn't have happened. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I certainly don't know if it would or would have not have happened. But what I do know is when you look at what was at stake at Sochi, which was Russia had invested $50 billion into these games. And the mandate, according to Gregory, was to win at all cost. Because there was a lot on the line for Putin. And the reason why there was a lot on the line for Putin is not only had they spent these $50 billion, but he was showing the world the power of Russia. He was showing what Russia was capable of doing on a world stage. And the Olympics is this amazing place to show that because of what goes into building those Olympic Games and carrying out those Olympic Games. So Russia winning 33 medals, which they topped the medal count in their own Olympic Games. Essentially, if you look at the chart of Putin's popularity, it skyrockets, literally somewhere to like 95% approval rating.
Right.
So he becomes essentially the most powerful and beloved man in Russia. And according to Gregory, he used that power and love to then go and attack Crimea, Ukraine, because the country was behind him. He could do no wrong.
Right.
And, you know, look at what Orwell says about sport, which is sport is war without the weapons. And in this case, it certainly seems that Russia used the Olympics as a precursor to war.
And you talk about in the documentary also, and we discussed, that Russia was similar to China in the way that 2008 happened, and how the Chinese were so dominant in those games. It was certainly a different method, but that in some way Gregory felt like he had learned some things from how the Chinese did it.
Well, again, you look at what these Olympic Games are, right? And why they are so important. Because when you take the sport out of it, this is the entire world coming together every 2 years to compete against each other in love and harmony and unity. At least that's what the Olympics sell us.
Right.
But behind that is war. And what countries are showing is how they are dominant and the power and place that they have in the world.
Right.
And you look at like China and Beijing, right? Beijing was China's coming out party. This truly was. And the world still to this day has never seen an Olympics orchestrated to such precision that China did with Beijing. But what they were really showing behind the Olympic Games is that they were a military power,
mm-hmm.
that they were an economic power, that they could pull off an event on this scale. And Gregory, according to Gregory, because he was at the Beijing Games, China swapped the yuan in Beijing. And you look again at the Chinese medal count, and China, just like Russia and Sochi, swept the Olympics. They topped the medal count. National pride soared. And Gregory says that he got the idea to swap the yuan from China, but in China they did it differently. And in Sochi, they broke into the bottles. And according to Gregory, in China, the Chinese athletes would report to essentially Chinese agents who were the urine collection agents for their tests after competition. And they would report to these agents, and the agents would have secret bags of the clean urine that they would hand the athlete that they'd put under their armpit and then pee clean urine.
So that is different from what you described in the documentary, which is how they did it in Sochi, which
completely
was this, like,
different.
You described it as this, like, sort of, like, Ocean's 11 bank fraud.
Well, because China was able to pull that off because, A, you look at, like, essentially communist China and, you know, how are you going to, you know, that's how it is and nobody's speaking, you know, Mandarin is the way that I would
right.
look at it. But also the science got better. So what happened is the detection methods got better and better and better. And what Russia realized is that, A, they couldn't take a chance, but B, if they could have their athletes just take the steroids all the way through competition,
mm-hmm.
right, rather than try to evade detection, they would have a higher probability of winning. And because they controlled the lab, and because they controlled the whole infrastructure, they essentially created this Ocean's 11 kind of scheme within the lab, that half of the lab was not under camera surveillance, and they were able to essentially smuggle out the Russian urine samples that were collected earlier in the day out through the back of the lab to a KGB building across the street where there were the freezers held of all the clean urine samples of all the Russian athletes competing in the Sochi Games. And they would basically bring back this clean urine, and they figured out a way to break into these bottles, these impenetrable urine bottles. And in so doing, by being able to crack into these bottles, they were able to dump out the dirty urine and replace it for clean urine.
Which is a pretty brazen way to do it.
It's just outright fraud.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nothing to do with doping or anti-doping. It's just fraud.
Yeah.
It's just like counterfeiting money.
It's so crazy. Do you think that, based on all of the research that you did and everything you learned about this, do you think that other countries are having these state-sponsored doping programs in the world right now?
Well, I would say the answer to that is yes, but I certainly don't know to what extent and to what proof. But I think any time that you look at a country where sport is an arm of the government, This is where this is likely to exist. So if you take the United States, for example, right? All of our sport is privatized. Not to say that U.S. athletes don't dope, not to say that there isn't doping in America. There 100% is. But it's like an individual choice because the teams are privatized. So if you're playing for an NFL team or an NBA team or whatever, you're under a privately held team that is paying you a salary.
Right.
But if you're an athlete that is Russian, right, all of sport is under the government. It's all under the ministry, meaning each one of those athletes are employees of the government. The same goes in countries like India. The same goes in countries like Ethiopia. The same goes with Jamaica, etc., etc. So any time where you have a country where sport is essentially part of the government and the athletes are being paid by the government, I think that's where you start looking for similar programs, because sport is a way for a country to assert itself globally and show their strength.
Right. And so you also said that, you know, some of these programs are state-sponsored. In the way that you looked at Russia, the state sort of held also the media. And when Gregory fled to Los Angeles and was with you, you started seeing the way that the media took over, crafted his story, and you were sort of like an early recipient of using technology as a weapon.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what is really interesting, and we're starting to see this more in this country with this idea of fake news, which, you know, I think until a year ago, that was not in the lexicon. That was not in the American vocabulary, fake news versus real news,
right?
And what is real news and what is fake news. But what you see in a country like Russia or China, for example, where the outset is essentially a democracy or socialist democracy, but really it's still a totalitarian regime, mm-hmm. meaning the media and the flow of information is actually controlled by these governments. And in Russia, they are controlling media and what is being put out there. So the message, what Russia was able to do right after these allegations come, is not only did they have Gregory under surveillance, not only had they hacked his emails, not only did they have his family under surveillance and were recording his Skype calls and his phone calls, they were able to launch a smear campaign against him in the media that was basically not even fought against. It was just, this is Russia One, this is what Russia is putting out, and this is what we are saying. And you still see that to this day. You don't see multiple opinions. You see an opinion, and that opinion essentially is fact, and that fact is essentially the news, whether or not that news or fact is true.
Right. Can you talk about the parallels between what you saw in terms of the denials and the cover-ups with this whole process and in conjunction with our U.S. election and the hacking that went on with the DNC?
Well, I think there are a lot of parallels. The first thing is that there's a declassified report that was released in January of this year, and the FBI, CIA, NSA released this report, and they list basically 7 reasons why they believe that Russia hacked our election.
Right.
And one of those reasons, reason number 3, is for what they believe is Putin's essentially revenge, I guess as you would call it, for what he believed was the American interference into the doping scandal and the Panama Papers. Mm-hmm. Now, whether or not that is why our election was hacked, I do not know. But certainly this was a massive national embarrassment to Russia. And while it was certainly covered on a global level, in Russia, this story of Sochi and this scandal dominated Russian news. But then also, all that you've seen is denials about it. You have seen absolute zero responsibility or accountability to it, other than purely denying. And what you're seeing in our election hacking allegations is the same thing. You see the Kremlin denying, you see no responsibility, and you see no responsibility being taken or against any allegations that are being thrown at the current administration. So there are a lot of parallels there. To what extent, I don't know why our election was hacked, but I think what I do know is that this film, in seeing this film, 100% unequivocally shows what Russia is willing to do on a world stage to assert its dominance and to assert its power, right, and how far they are willing to go to win and to win at all costs.
And you felt specifically Putin blamed the United States because you and Gregory went to the New York Times and it was, and he came to Los Angeles, and it was a, you know, Department of Justice in U.S. custody that they were kind of like controlling it, so that he really specifically felt that it was an American effort.
Well, look, it wasn't an American effort, but I think you could understand from an outsider why Putin might have felt it was an American effort, because the way that media is controlled in Russia is different than it is in the United States. So you can see the parallel in Putin going, wait, he came to America and he had a visa, right? So America let him stay. The Department of Justice and FBI launched an investigation into the scandal, so that means that he's working with the American government. Right. He went to the New York Times, an American paper, and the American paper ran the story. He's under protective custody of the United States government. So you could certainly see why there might have been that misinformation, but I know for a fact that our government had nothing to do with leaking this Russia state-sponsored doping program. This was Gregory. Gregory came forward with this information. He came to me with this information, and the two of us essentially worked, compiled this information, and then took this information to the New York Times. And nowhere along the way was the United States government involved in that. Right. But I can understand why there might be that misperception.
Well, it's a fantastic documentary, and hopefully everyone gets a chance to see it. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, and thanks for having me on the show.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle @LateNightSeth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.